How do you do? I'm Captain E.J. Smith of the Titanic. You're listening to Speaking of History.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations.
I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Men will still say, this was our finest hour.
Hello, and welcome to Speaking of History. My name is Eric Langhorst. I'm an 8th grade American history teacher in Liberty, Missouri. And the Speaking of History podcast focuses on education, technology, and history. You're listening to episode number 36, and the topic tonight is the newly opened Titanic Museum in Branson, Missouri. Growing up as a child, I can remember reading many books about the Titanic. I can remember back in sixth grade when they found the Titanic on the ocean floor and reading the story in National Geographic about that over and over again, looking at the pictures and being fascinated by the entire story of the Titanic and actually finding the ship. And so last fall, when I was at the National Social Studies Conference in Kansas City, and I saw a booth on the exhibit floor talking about a new museum that was going to be opening up in Branson about the Titanic, I knew that at some point I would have to go down and check that out. So last week, I actually did a presentation on podcasting and creating blogs and video for some teachers in Webb City, Missouri, which is down in the southwestern part of Missouri. So my wife and I went down a little bit early and went to the Titanic Museum in Branson, and we're absolutely just fascinated by what they have. It's an amazing museum. They have over 400 actual artifacts from the Titanic. Actually, the building itself looks like the Titanic. It's a half-scale model. So when you drive up, you see this 100-foot-high bow of the Titanic, and it's got the smokestacks, and it looks just like the Titanic did, so it's very visually appealing when you first drive up. And then once you get into the museum, you're giving a boarding pass, and it gives you some information about one of the 2,000 passengers that was on the Titanic when it sank. And then as you go through the museum, at some point you can find out more information about the person that you have on your boarding pass, and then ultimately at the end of your tour through the museum, you can check and see what the fate of the person that you're given on your boarding pass was. But it's a great museum. They have an 18-foot long model of the Titanic. This build is the most accurate model of the Titanic in the world. They have many hands-on exhibits. For example, at one point you can actually step onto a part of the deck at various times as the ship was sinking that night. So I believe the first one that you get on is about a 12-degree incline. So you get a feel for how the ship started to kind of tilt a little bit as it began to sink in the water. And then ultimately the last one is a 45-degree angle, and it really shows you just how steep the ship began to get before it sank down below the water. And then they also have a display where you can actually put your hand inside a small kind of sink of water, and the water is kept at 28 degrees because of it being salt water. It didn't freeze at 32 degrees. It was actually 28 degrees at night. And to give you an idea of what the people had to endure that survived the ship sinking, you can put your hand or your finger into that water and see how long you can keep it in there. And I kept it in for about a minute. Accounts from that night say that nobody lasted longer than about 40 minutes actually in the water. So it actually gives you an idea of what that was like when the people were trying to survive after the ship sank. But there's tons of pictures, actual artifacts. You know, it's very tastefully done. You find out a lot about the people that were on the ship, and it's an amazing museum. I mean, I guess I had some expectations going in that it was going to be really neat, and by the time I left, I was even more impressed than I thought I would be. I also met up with two people that could tell me a little bit more about the museum. I sat down and had a conversation with Lowell Lytle, and he is the person that portrays Captain Smith. If you're walking around the museum, at some point you'll probably see him come up, and we were actually in the dining room at one point, and he came in and introduced himself as Captain Smith, and then told us a little bit about how the ship was actually a little bit ahead of schedule, and also talked about if we see any of those people from steerage coming up to the grand staircase, we as first class passengers should let them know so they can make sure that they don't come into our dining area. And then he also tells various stories about some of the passengers that were on board the Titanic. He looks exactly like pictures of Captain Smith, so it was a very, very accurate portrayal, almost eerie how close he looks to the actual pictures of Captain Smith. And then I also sat down with John Jocelyn, who's the president of the museum, and we just kind of talked a little bit about the museum and what people's reactions are when they come to the museum, and about a little bit about some of the artifacts. So here's my conversation with them after I went through the Titanic Museum. Now, I think I read once there are about 200 people in the world that have been down to Titanic. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about it. I was the 109th person that went down. Quite an amazing event. When I got out to St. John's, Newfoundland, that's where we had to leave from. It takes a day and a half to get out to the site. I heard that there was a hurricane going through, and they had moved the ship 100 miles off the site, and we had to wait for 3 days. Well, in St. John's, Newfoundland, there's not a whole lot to look at, you know. There's some buildings and old buildings that are quite quaint and interesting, but I decided, well, I'll go to a movie. I saw the wrong movie, A Perfect Storm.
Oh.
Right over the site. That's, you know, oh my goodness, the Grand Banks. Well, yes, the captain... he had the last speech. They handed me this about 9 years ago, and they said this is his last speech, so I shall commit it to you if you'd like to hear.
Okay, great, yes.
He said, how do you do? He said, my name is Captain E.J. Smith. No doubt you've already heard I've recently announced my retirement from the White Star Line. The maiden voyage of Titanic will be my final crossing as ship's captain. My wife Eleanor will clarify that. It's been many good years since I first went to sea, at age 12, as a cabin boy on a square rigger. I signed on with White Star at age 27. Since that time, I've had the good fortune of traveling with many fine people with whom I admire. As to how best to describe my experience in nearly 45 years at sea, I merely have to say it's been nothing out of the ordinary. Of course, there's always been the occasional winter gales, storms, fog, and the like, but on the whole, it's been uneventful. Sea trials for Titanic took place April the 2nd out of Belfast. We lit 20 boilers and achieved speeds of 18 knots. Stirred up quite a weight down River Lagan. The ship handles beautifully. It is designed for performance, and above all, safety. I could not conceive of any vital disaster happening to this vessel. Modern shipbuilding has gone beyond that. That speech, word for word, is the last speech the captain ever gave.
Wow. Now, as my family was going through the museum, you just kind of walk through the museum?
Well, no, I'll give a little bit of speech from time to time and tell stories. You know, there's some interesting stories that have taken place, but... when they first see me, I'll just walk into that restaurant room, you know, from the bridge, and I'll say, may I have your attention, please? Will everyone in the room look this way just for a moment, please? Thank you. How do you do? I'm Captain E.J. Smith. I have some good news. I've just been informed by the Marconi people with their wonderful wireless there should be little or no wind for the next 7-8 days. Should be a smooth sail all the way to New York. Perhaps even make it ahead of schedule. Mr. Ismay, managing director of the White Star Line, would be pleased to know that. He loves to get the headlines in the New York Times, you know. It's competition for the Cunard Line. We've also been informed by a few vessels out there that an unusual ice flow has broken loose from the Arctic region. It's drifting a little further south than normal for this time of year. Not to worry, however, we shall skirt about it. We have plenty of people on watch. We were so happy you've chosen the White Star Line to be with us on Titanic's maiden voyage. I promise you, it will be a voyage you will never forget. Thank you. A little speech like that, it'll change it from time to time. It'll do a few other things, you know. It's quite entertaining, I believe. And then there's some stories that I will tell. And I get to the memorial room, and boy, some interesting. There's one interesting story, you know. This was, my wife gave me a book 9 years ago entitled Titanic's Last Hero. Not too many people know about this. But he was a Scottish Baptist preacher. He had spoken at Moody Memorial Church several times, and I guess they loved him, wanted him back for 3 more months of meetings. Reverend Harper thought he would take the Lusitania, but changed his mind and decided to take the Titanic. And a friend prayed about it and went to the Reverend and said, Reverend, I have an ominous feeling about that ship. He said, if you'll take the Lusitania, I'll pay for your ticket. How about that? A lot of people had ominous feelings about the Titanic. The Reverend thought about it. He said, no, the Apostle Paul wouldn't run away from danger. If anything happens, he said, I'm ready. And it happened. When the ship started to go down, Reverend Harper's faith was put to the test. And this Baptist minister went around the deck shouting, women and children and unsaved people, get aboard the lifeboats. He's still preaching. He even took off his life vest, gave it to a man that was not a believer in Jesus Christ. Felt that would give him a little more time to get his soul ready for eternity, because eternity was about to happen. His sister-in-law was standing right next to him. She survived. His sister-in-law overheard the Reverend when he gave that life vest to that man. He said, here, you take it. I don't need it. I'm not going down. I'm going up. He's in the water now, 28 degrees, Officer Lightoller said. It's like 1,000 knives stabbing you. And a man drifted by on a piece of wood, and Reverend Harper shouted to the man, is your soul saved? Still preaching. The man said, no. Reverend Harper said, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved. And the man drifted off into the dark, and later the current drew him back. And Reverend Harper again shouted to the man, are you saved yet? The man said, I can't honestly say that I am. Reverend Harper's last words were, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved. And with that, the Reverend slipped under the water and went to that frozen, watery grave. There were 12 people pulled from the water that night. 6 of them lived. That man was one of them. And a story was told a few weeks later in Hamilton, Ontario, by an individual who said that man writing on that piece of wood listened to Reverend Harper's last message and became a believer in Jesus Christ. He said, I know the story is true because I was that man. Wow. Titanic's last hero, Reverend John Harper. Mm. Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah. It's an
amazing story.
Mm. Yeah, I put my hand in the water for about a minute.
Well, you'd last anywhere from... You, if you were in the water, you would last anywhere from 10 minutes to 40 minutes, depending on your will to live and how much body weight. Mm. But all the cries and the screams all ended after 40 minutes. These people did not drown. They froze to death. Mm. One man survived in a lifeboat later on, lived in Detroit, Michigan. He said, every time I went to see the Detroit Tigers play baseball, someone would hit a home run and the crowd would yell and scream. He said, it was the same sound. He said, I hated that sound. Hmm.
Hmm. So how many years have you been?
9 years.
9 years?
Yes. All around the world.
So do you ever find it hard to draw a line between yourself and Captain Smith?
Well, you know, I'm an actor, and I try to assume the role as the not be Lowell Lytle, you know. Mm. Who's he? He's nothing. When I put on this uniform, I want to be that man as much as I read a book about the man before I ever took the job, about 1.5 inches thick. And the first 2 chapters referred to him as E.J. Smith, Edward John Smith. From then on, his nickname was Teddy. Not too many people know that. And I boned up on it as to how much information about the man, in case somebody asked me questions like, what kind of food did he like and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Nobody ever asked that. Yeah. So all that I worked on, nobody asked. They just want to know if I'm the real captain. That's the scary thing, you know?
Yeah.
I'd be 158 years old. I'd look pretty good, don't you think, for 158? But it's enjoyable when I go through the exhibit, you know, and the people. It's all about people, you know. Things are not interesting. People are.
Mm.
And the Titanic was all about people. And the artifacts that are in this exhibit are just amazing. In all of the exhibits, RMS Titanic, they have some great artifacts. You go through and you see that, and you look at it, you read things about them, and you just kind of feel like you're a part of it, especially when you come into the exhibit, you get a boarding pass with the name of a passenger that was on board that night.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the memorial wall later on, you look, check to see if you survived or not. And I've watched people's reaction. Some will just jump up and down, they're so excited. Others will walk away in tears.
Mm.
They didn't make it. And that's how involved they get. With these artifacts here, when you read all about these people, it just becomes alive. They assume them. And when they see me walking around, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Those that are freaky about it, I mean, they're really totally into the Titanic.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, they'll grab their heart. It's a strange thing. I had no idea what the captain looked like when I first took the job. I had seen the movie like you, you know, most people. I wasn't a historian when it came to that.
Yeah.
I built ships. Ask me about the Santa Maria. I built the Santa Maria and sailed it in the Tall Ships Parade in 76 for the bicentennial.
Wow.
I know a lot about Columbus, but, you know, I really wasn't much on the Titanic. But they called me from Orlando when John Jocelyn had, he owns this exhibit, he owned that one too. And the designer, you know, he after they went through 450 actors and actresses and trying to find the right kind of people, couldn't find an actor that could play the part of the captain. And the designer said, I know someone that can play that part. He's my next door neighbor.
Hmm.
Actually, he was a lead singer in one of my rock and roll bands. I had eight bands that toured the country for 20-some years.
Wow.
And I didn't know what the captain looked like. I went through the exhibit. I just thought the exhibit was amazing. You know, just fantastic. Well, you think that's good. Wait till you come to this one. This is incredible. This is the biggest, the largest. It's the best Titanic exhibit that there is. Well, I went through the souvenir shop, and I saw off the front page of the New York Times, Eric, from about 15 feet away. And my first impression was Mark Locke, this fellow that used to work for me.
Mm.
He had taken my picture, put it in black and white, and pasted it on the front page of the New York Times. I thought, he shouldn't do that. That's wrong. And I got a little closer, and I took a better look, and I could see I was a little better looking than the old man.
Wow.
But it's been a fun run. I've enjoyed it. I've just had a blast. I put on the uniform, and I become Captain E.J. Smith.
Wow. Well, thank you very much. This was very interesting.
Yes, you bet, Eric.
Thank you. It was seen as,
sir. John Jocelyn, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Great.
This is the man.
Can I ask you some questions about the
Sure, absolutely.
This is the man that's the dreamer that puts it together.
And this is my card. That's the address for the podcast.
Oh, that's great.
There are a lot of people that dream and they just don't go anywhere, but you put legs under the dreams and pay the price, whatever it takes, to make it happen.
Yeah. We kind of both been there.
Yep.
We both kind of understand that.
So so take us back a little bit. You have a Titanic Museum in Orlando as well?
We did, yes, correct. Uh-huh. Yeah, we started back 20 years ago. Started looking to produce television shows. I was a network producer, and once you start feeding that monster, you always got to do something new. And they had just found Titanic, and I said, why can't we go out and show something better? And the network said, okay, let's do it. So we did. So we put a whole expedition together and actually went out to the Titanic, dove, I think, about 33 dives, and collected television. And at the same time, we recovered about 1,800 artifacts, they claim. I mean, you know, there's a lot of coinage and currency in that, so really about 900 solid, hard pieces that we brought up from the ocean floor. And that started exhibitions and all that at that point.
Wow. So why Branson? I mean, right in the middle of the United States here.
7 million reasons why. And what you just said, it's right in the middle. If you put a thumbtack in the middle of Branson and you drew a radius around it, of 500 miles, which would be about a day's drive, 52% of the U.S. population is in that radius.
Wow.
And I just saw the enormous potential here that we had, and then I looked at the demographic profile, and Titanic usually has always been a little older skewing demographic, museums, mm-hmm. things like that. But we're proving it totally wrong now here. I mean, with that outside icon,
right?
We get families, I don't know, well, I don't even know numbers, probably two-thirds to one-third, maybe even more.
With the children, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I saw tons of families.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of families. Yeah. It's amazing. And what's even more fun is early on we saw the teenage market. I mean, I remember one afternoon I walked in the back door and there was four teenagers, really probably 14, 17 years old, and they were all sitting there talking, and I stopped, I couldn't resist, and I said, you know, have you been through yet? Oh, that's, you know, this and this one. And finally, yeah. one of the boys said, he was 15, he goes, I've been through four times already.
Sure.
Wow. I go, how do you get a teenager to go through here four times? Pretty yeah. incredible.
Yeah. So I grew up in a small town in Nebraska, and, you know, coming down here, I was thinking about, you know, why I've been interested in the Titanic. And I can remember going to our small town library, and the book I checked out more than anything was this old, tattered, it was one of the first accounts. I think that, you know, copyright was like 1918 or something. And I checked that out, and I checked that out, and I checked that out, and I can remember when they found it when I was in fifth grade, and, you know, read National Geographic and stuff. And so, I mean, I think there's just kind of a universal appeal that, you know, I don't know, I can't define it, I guess, but...
Well, there's a mystique, and nobody can really define it. I mean, a lot of people have talked about it, and I think part of it has to do because we're raised around it. It's a fascinating story. This microcosm of society was on board, the Edwardian age. I think that all has a lot to do with it, but nobody can really define why people has an interest. And I don't care if you're in the U.S., I don't care if you're in France or Germany. I've been on airplanes with people from New Delhi, and the minute I said Titanic, their ears peek up. And I remember once there was an engineer from New Delhi, and when I said Titanic, he went, Titanic? I mean, I said, now where do you know about Titanic coming from New Delhi? He goes, oh, in Catholic school. He says, we know all about Titanic. So they used it as a lesson there. So it's kind of a universal thing. Also, I think it also fits here so very, very well. We are in kind of the Bible Belt here, or the buckle of the Bible Belt, and people understand, you know, when the adversity of what went on, that, man, this was the largest moving object on the face of the earth in those days. And 5 days later, it was gone. How does that happen? So I think there's lessons that people understand and equate to religion. Say, you know, even then, you look back in books and I said, you know, I remember, I think it was Edith Hodman said, my mother said, don't put your hand in the face of God. You don't ever do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they all felt that way. They felt the grace. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an attachment from a religious standpoint of what can happen when you think you're a little better than God himself. Yeah.
I think right at the end there, when you get to the memorial board and you look to see if you survive, I think the people have a tendency to think about, what would I do?
Yeah.
In a situation like he just said, you know, from that part of life, is there a life after, and what do I, am I ready, and all this kind of stuff. And I think one of the best things you get out of this is to walk out of this place knowing you're still alive.
Yeah.
That's a good feeling.
You hate to always say, you know, and so often you sit someplace and you say, well, did you survive?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a terrible thing to say, but you know what, stand outside.
Yep.
And everyone goes out and saying, well, I survived. I mean, I walked out last night and I heard a couple of four adults. Well, I survived.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they all have that attention, you know, where you realize that. But I've also been upstairs, and I know Lowell has too, when you see some big burly guy come in, and when he comes in and he sees it, I'll tell you, he's over in the corner thinking about it. He realizes his kids maybe wouldn't be here tomorrow. And they go, they grabs them. It does. It just knocks them out.
Yep.
Takes the air out of their sails. It is pretty amazing. I saw it happen in Orlando. I see it here, the touring units, all of them. Great common denominator when you realize your family of the five of you and one's missing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the Lawrence Beasley, the second class passenger, he survived. And he said he was close to the Titanic when it went down. And he said the last 30 minutes, men gathered around on the deck in small groups and prayed. Isn't it amazing when after man's best technology has run its course that we call on a higher power? But he's right. There's a religious aspect to the Titanic. There's no getting around it.
The artifacts are amazing. I mean, you know, like I was, you know, Lowell saying, it's not about the things, it's about the people, but being able to have the things to tell the story just makes all that come alive.
Yep.
Are these I mean, this has to be the best collection in the world of Titanic artifacts. Are they on loan, or how do you...
It's a combination. We own a lot of them, but the other ones are on loan. We have about five other collectors we work with, been with us a long time. They like what we do tremendously. And we also take very good care of their material, and that goes hand in hand with it. You've got to make sure that at all times their stuff is thought of as their children. I mean, it's funny, Jim Kreitzer, which owns all the Marconi equipment, that's the first time anyone's been able to assemble all in one place at one time. Even in the movie, they had to replicate it because it just wasn't available. And I've known him about a dozen years, and about 8-10 years, I guess. And I went to him, and he said, well, I don't know, John, you know, I don't normally show this stuff. And it took convincing, and we went out one night in New York, and said this would be okay. But when he came here to do the installation, and he came here, got it all in, and when he went to leave, someone said to me, I think he would leave his 16-year-old son behind before he leaves that equipment. So they're that attached to it. And we do. We call them, it's their children. And it is. Those artifacts, they're very attached to them. So for us to have them, I mean, it's a blessing that they at least entrust us with their valuables like that. But we take very good care of them. You know, we have underground vaults and things like that when we rotate them, and insurance, and how we take care of the VUV problems and how we take care of the dust problems. It's all becomes part and parcel with it.
It's very interactive, too. I mean, you know, I was intrigued by the three different levels of how the ship tilted as it went down, and you actually stand on the deck that's 12 degrees, and I think the last one's 45, and, you know, put your hand in the ice water and see how long how did you come up with all the different...
It's a combination. I mean, we have a marvelous designer by the name of, Bob Fleming. But talked all the time, I got to think about that. But Bob is very creative, and he came up with a lot of the interactive areas, and because we said we really need much more of that, I think. And it's simplistic stuff. I mean, those decks, I mean, there's not a rocket scientist to figure this out. And absolutely everyone loves it. I mean, I see kids on it. I see adults on it.
My two-year-old walked on it.
But the good news is it makes the attachment. So you have some feeling of their fate that night. Here, all of a sudden, you're here, and now you're there. And, you know, and then you look up, and you go, 2 minutes later, and you go, wow, the water.
Yeah.
Nothing better than putting your hand in water. You know?
It's simple, there were probably five or six people around. We all were handing them. We're seeing how long we can last, you know, just one finger in the water.
Oh, yeah, I love to go and go, come on, don't worry about it. Put your hand in there.
Yeah, let's just put your finger in and see. So everyone's like, put their finger around the corner and stuff.
Well, it's funny is they do get their hand in, and then you sit there and say, okay, now move it around a little. Of course, you're moving around and it chills it even more.
Oh, yeah. Now, if a lot of teachers listen to the podcast, so if they're a teacher in California or New Jersey and they want to make a connection with the museum, I know from looking at the website a little bit, you have some lesson plans for different subjects. What are some things that you can do to help them facilitate maybe a lesson on Titanic? Do you have educational people here?
We do. Yeah, and we really push the educational side of it because there's great lessons. It's depending if you're history or if you're into science, into math, it all fits. I mean, we'll give, we haven't been open that long, but in the short time that we've been open, I mean, we'd have days in May when the kids could still come in here. On a Friday morning, we limit it to Friday mornings, and we would have a dozen buses come in 3 hours. And finally, we had to say to our normal customer, we think it might be a better idea if you come back after lunch.
Right, yeah.
And it's just, the kids just run through and they have a great time. But it's, again, it's all ages. You know, yeah. It could be, you know, 8, 10 years old up to teenagers.
Yeah.
And you see them going through with those study plans in their hand, carrying them, looking at, making the rollers, picking out stuff. So it's a good educational tool for them. Hmm. It's a good lesson.
The amazing thing is I'm finding, and I have in 9 years, it's so many young children, 6, 7, 8, know everything about the Titanic. At least they say they do. One, I was in Chicago, and the mother came with her 7-year-old son. She says, my son knows everything about the Titanic. He's even built a 4-foot model of the Titanic out of toilet paper rolls. And I sat him, he wants his picture taken with you, and I sat him down and I said, why are you so interested in Titanic? We're just talking about that. You know, the media has asked me, why is it? And I can't give a good answer. There's just so many, you know. So I sent this kid down, and I figure he's going to have to help me here.
Yeah.
Why is it he's so interested in the Titanic after, at such a young age? And he said, well, I like beautiful things, and I like to break things. Now that's coming from a 7-year-old boy, right?
Yeah.
But you never know. I mean, other people, the kids will say, it was such a big ship, it was such a beautiful thing, and it was such a disaster. And they know. They read everything about it.
Oh, yeah.
And it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. Some of their lines are hysterical. I mean, I remember when we first opened, a young boy came through, you saw him. He had a full captain's outfit on with a hat and all. I remember we came over to Mary, and he had asked somebody about his... And I talked to the owner or whatever, and Mary happened to be there and went over and said, I'm Mary Kellogg. He says, I just think this is the most awesome experience I've ever witnessed in my whole life. Another kid wrote in our guest book, he says, how do you put it? He says, this is better than a fat kid eating cake. How's that for a description?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, here's someone at that age, 8, 9 years old, that's really thought of poetically how to say this, so it really makes a message. In fact, we use that line in some of our ads. Better than a fat kid eating cake. Wow. So it does strike, yeah.
Yeah, I was very impressed with it. It's very well done. And
well, thank you. Everyone's worked very hard. I
encourage anybody that has any interest in history of any kind. I mean, this is just a great experience to go through and see and to understand a little bit. And you know, like you said, I think you leave with a little bit of a higher feeling. I mean, it's not religious, but it's...
No,
you
had a good time.
Yeah, you kind of...
You feel good when you leave.
Yeah.
Even though it's sadness, you know, that's even the last gallery. We purposely do that Discovery Gallery last because you've been in a memorial route. You want to make sure when
right,
you leave...
Yeah.
You're not just focusing on it.
Oh, right.
Now I've seen James Cameron's wreck. Here's what it looks on the bottom. I've seen photographs. So it pulls you out of that. So there is a reason why we do certain things through it.
Yeah.
But people do get an experience. And I say at the end of the day, I mean, I think out of everything, what's the best thing? It's just seeing smiles on their faces. And they go through. And boy, we had really a good time.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's funny, I got a... You what? Oh, it is? Oh, great. Thanks.
I'll show you.
Okay.
Smiles on their faces. We leave with smiles on their faces.
Oh, yeah. I was going someplace else, but something else clicked and lost my train of thought there. But it is the best, though. I mean, you know, Lowell's been involved with it a long time. I've been involved with it a long time. And it's a subject, you know, we can't put a fingerprint on why people are attached to it. All we can say is it's got a certain mystique. And I remember... Charlie Eaton and John Haas wrote this a long time ago in one of their first books. Said, there's a mystique about it. Ballard has said it. No one can quite put a pulse why, but it's like producing television shows on it. I produce 3 of them. Every time we do, they're home run hitters.
Yeah.
Ratings just go through the roof. Networks love it. So, and everyone keeps producing. I mean, who would think a movie? And I worked very early with Jim Cameron on just some of the stuff, providing footage so he could see what the bottom looked like and that. And I remember seeing the early script, and I went, okay, yeah, it's nice. You know? And the project went on for a couple of years, and we'd talk, and then I saw the footage when he went out to the ship, and I go, yeah, that's pretty cool. I got, boy, he knows a lot about this. And then he and I went back and forth where he was going to shoot an underwater tank, and I had been shooting in Malta, and tried to contact people there and talk to them about Jim wanted fresh water. And they go, no way. I said, do you want to do this or not? And he said, okay, we'll put fresh water in the tank. And You watch him then. He had such a big plan. They were going to build that studio in Baja, and they did. And when you think of that, and then the thing goes out, and I saw the finished shooting script, and I went, this is a home run.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Kate Winslet come on board, and I saw Leo, and then you realize the chemistry, what was there, and it was just, and I said to then George Tulloch, which was my original partner in the original RMS Titanic, and I said to George, I think we ought to be involved. And he said, oh, no, John, we can't be involved. He said, if that thing's a failure, it could doom us. When the $2 billion worldwide, and it still is out there. Oh, we can't keep the home, the video of Titanic movie of Cameron. I cannot keep it on the shelf. Wow. Cannot keep it on the shelf. That movie has been in DVD form for 8 years now.
Yeah.
It was at home box office last week.
Was it really?
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just, you know, books and that. So it is an amazing subject, and I kind of laugh, and a little humorous also, and kind of chuckle to yourself. I mean, no, this wasn't a pre-designed destiny for either one. And say,
no.
20 years I've done this. I've been on this ship, long passenger, and low, been as long as I have. And you go, you know, and I thought to myself even recently, and you know, because nothing is cast what happens in life. And I go, what would... 20 years later, we're still doing Titanic.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. There must be a greater guiding path here somewhere. It says, I guess you're supposed to be on this ship for a reason. So we're here, and we're enjoying the cruise. So,
well, thank you very much for sitting down with us.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so glad you came
it's
down.
It's a great museum.
This is great what you're doing. I like that.
Good line to end it with, as you did. We're enjoying the cruise.
We are.
Thanks again to Lowell and John for taking time out of their day to sit down and visit a little bit about the museum. I'd encourage everyone listening to the podcast to go ahead and check out the show notes that I've posted. I do have an official link to the website for the Branson Museum on the Titanic, and I encourage you to check that out. If you go to the website, you can really get a better feel for what the exhibits look like, and there's numerous pictures on there. But then also for educators, they have included quite a few links that you can tie the Titanic to several different things in your classroom, regardless of what subject you teach. There's some things there for science and math, social studies. So go ahead and check out the resources. And they're more than happy to also work with you if you are working on a project about the Titanic. Go ahead and contact them. You know, these people are experts on the Titanic. This is what they do for a living. And they said that they'd be more than happy to work with you if you had a question on something related to the Titanic. So go ahead and check out the educational links, but then also check out the museum. If you're in the Branson area, I would strongly encourage you to stop in and look at the Titanic Museum. Like I said, my wife and I were very impressed. And if you're a history buff, if you like the Titanic, or you're just looking for something that's really well done, this is a great museum to check out. As always, if you have any comments or suggestions for the podcast, go ahead and email me at speakingofhistory@gmail.com. And this was, again, one of the stops on the summer tour 2006, History Hits the Road. And I do have quite a bit more content that I haven't edited yet. I do have some material from our trip back out to the East Coast by Washington, D.C., and I'll be editing that stuff up soon. We do start school in about 2 or 3 weeks, so I've got a couple weeks left where I got some free time, and I'll try and edit a lot of the material that I've been collecting this summer and put it up on some podcasts for you. So thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye. The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.